the Flames picking up the 3-0 victory over the Toronto Maple Leafs. I wish our next guest was here. Normally, he's around the Maple Leafs, but not so last night as we go down the South Street Burger guest hotline. And Chris Johnston, senior hockey writer and NHL insider for Sportsnet, joins us. It's really simple math, Chris. To beat the Toronto Maple Leafs, you score 2 goals in the first minute. Then you just try to run the clock out with your goalie.
Well, it certainly worked last night. I mean, no complaints of that that game strategy in that one. But, you know, I think certainly for Leafs fans and hearing some of the talk locally here today in Toronto, it was, you know, just how well Johnston played in that game. And you know, I'm sure he's been getting lots of attention on your station there, Rob. But it was a chance, I guess, for those out east to be reminded that, you know, this guy that was playing in Buffalo and really could have signed anywhere, including Toronto, because
yep.
The Leafs were in the market for a goalie last summer as well. You know, it's been a pretty good pickup by the Flames.
There is somewhat of a history, is there not, over the last couple of decades of older guys who maybe have kicked around who somehow find the right situation, get the right opportunity, and make the most of it in that position. And, you know, I think of Mike Smith when he went to Phoenix. I think of Craig Anderson. You can look at, you know, Devin Dubnyk, who the Flames will see tomorrow with the Minnesota Wild. You know, he got an opportunity when he got traded to Minnesota and his run with it. It's not uncommon in that position anyway. It's becoming a younger league, but there's still the opportunity for a more veteran goalie to be given opportunity to turn it into something.
Well, by far, goaltending, I think, remains the toughest position, especially, obviously, for the teams that don't have it when you're looking for it. Because, you know, from year to year, there's such a variance in performance, even from the really good guys. I mean, the truly elite ones, the guys you consider the best of the best, you know, Carey Price, when healthy right now, you know, at this stage, we can put him in for an extremely high save percentage and being someone Montreal can count to win games. But, you know, Pekka Rinne, for example, in Nashville, who's you know, getting paid a pretty big sum of money. He's had a lot of ups and downs. I mean, I think that it's actually more common that goalies, you know, have some sort of 2 great years and 1 poor year. And I think it makes it very difficult. Yeah. It's why a lot of teams now, I think, are reluctant, unless you feel like you have a price, to give out a $6 or $7 million a year contract to these type of players, just because, you know, there is such a balloon effect there. And you know, as a result, you can find some good buys in the value bin. And you know, Devin Dubnyk's probably the best example that I can think of from recent years, because, you know, he was very nearly out of the NHL. He was the third or fourth goalie, you know, one playoff run for the Habs, just hanging, you know, kicking around, not playing. You know, got traded a couple times that year. And then, you know, even when Minnesota got him, I don't think they expected much. And he went on a crazy run and earned a long-term contract and is still playing well to this day. So, you know, it is tough. And as I've looked into this a bit more, you know, a lot of people are claiming that they saw something in Chad Johnson that maybe, you know, I wasn't hearing about a lot last summer. But, you know, maybe this guy will be the next one to parlay what he's doing, you know, and it's still early in the season, into kind of more stability and you know, more, I guess, recognition as a number one goalie in the league.
Having said that, what has recent history taught us about getting ahead of ourselves? You know, I'm really good at coming up with the good examples, but I sometimes seem to let, you know, my sieve-like mind forget about some other players that, you know, really what we're talking about with Chad Johnson, not to take anything away from the player, the athlete here, this is 10 games. You know, when do we begin to have these more serious conversations? This has been a great run. And as you say, I've heard the same things. There's a lot of people really now coming out and saying, you know, we could have seen this coming. But when does one really begin to take this serious? When does this kind of workload really, you know, seem to fit?
Well, let's say if he does it for half a season, then it doesn't mean he can't have a bad game in there like anyone. But if he really shows you for like a real prolonged amount of time, you know, even if he mixes in a bad game and comes back and has, you know, 3 solid outings like the ones he's had, I think that gives you a little bit more confidence. But, you know, in his case, it'll be about, you know, getting past potentially. I mean, now I'm going to get ahead of myself, because we all know that Brian Elliott is capable of retaking that net if you know, Chad Johnson, you know, opens the door back, you know, to him. But I think for him, it's about getting past, you know, the most he's played in the past, showing that he can kind of do more than maybe what has been seen. And I think that's going to be key to, you know, having people view this as more than just kind of a really hot run where everything fell in place, or, you know, maybe even some of the good luck was on his side, or whatever it is. But I mean, my goodness, 3 shutouts at this point in the season, and to come out and, you know, really, I think, help secure the Flames some points at a tough time in their year. I mean, I don't want to degrade that either, but we're still a fair ways out from being sure about what this is and about what it's worth in terms of how much you want to, whether it's the Flames or someone else come the summer, how much you want to commit them in terms of money or time.
Chris Johnson from Sportsnet, our NHL insider, joining us down the South Street Burger guest hotline. I hate to be this guy, but I'll be this guy for the sake of this conversation. Major League Baseball avoided a lockout. They got a deal done, a new CBA in with 4 hours to spare, which kind of makes me wonder a little again about what happens in the National Hockey League vis-a-vis. Sounds like the players are going to reject the 3-year extension to go to the Olympics. What are you hearing on that story?
Yeah, there's no chance they're taking that. I think, what we're still trying to get our minds around is are they going to negotiate off that? Are they going to at least look to extend it if they can get a little bit more than what's been offered? But certainly in the NHL, I don't think we're at that point where you can say they're going to make a deal now, they're going to extend it. I think that this is going to go much more down to the wire. I mean, the good thing is that it's not until September 2019 when both the NHLPA or the NHL have to decide if they want to end the CBA a little bit early. And even if they did that, there'd still be another year before it expired. And potentially it could go all the way to 2022 before the current agreement expires. So they're not facing a deadline. And we do know that in most negotiations of any sort, it takes a deadline to really produce a deal where both sides get entirely serious and start making, some compromises on their positions and finding things out. The baseball players really are the model, and it's something that Donald Fehr, of course, started. He was there during the 94 strike running the MLBPA when they missed the World Series, and Major League Baseball hasn't had an interruption in their labor situation since then. They've been able to come to agreements. In 2002, they went down to the wire, and they went down to the wire, I guess, yesterday. But, it's encouraging to see some leagues get it done because, a lot of the same lawyers, I mean, the thing that we all are capable of looking. A lot of the same lawyers in New York work on these sorts of cases. I mean, the leagues are based there, and even though the sports are different, and in this case, certainly baseball, not having a salary cap, makes it entirely unique from all the other major pro sports in North America. But if they're able to come up with things that some of these, I guess some of the what gets included in one sport gets carried over to another, and let's hope. I think I'm very comfortable saying I hope we don't see another one of these the next time out.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm absolutely there with you. But I'm a little bit disappointed would be the wrong word. I think I'm just mad at myself because I had a bit of a false sense or some sort of optimism after watching the two sides work at the World Cup, arm in arm, come up with it, deliver it, all of that. I just wondered if that didn't usher in a new sense of cooperation. But I don't get this. I think I was looking for something that wasn't actually there, Chris.
Well, here's the thing. The last two in particular, obviously in 04, 05, when we lost the whole season of hockey, that, everyone went to that bargaining table knowing that there was going to be a serious lockout, and probably the principals knew it was likely going to cost at least a season. I think the same thing occurred in 2012, leading into the 2012-2013 lockout, that, they knew, in private at least, that that's where it was headed. I'm not certain that the next one's going there. I will say that at least a couple years out here, we can look at the things that they share in common, like the World Cup, a shared vision to expand the game internationally. I don't just mean with the Olympics and some of the other things we've discussed, but, having games again in Europe is definitely on the slate. There's talk now of putting a game in Asia, and clearly both the NHL and NHLPA are interested in the Asian market in terms of finding ways to make money and to establish themselves and to make headway. And, there could be more of a spirit of cooperation, even though there's still obviously differences, as there is when any two sides negotiate these things, to find an ability, I think, to not have a work stoppage the next time. But we're just too far out to truly handicap it. I think even, if you had Gary Bettman and a bunch of Truth Serum and Donald Fehr on your program, I don't think they could say for sure right now what's going to happen. But I do sense that there's at least the possibility that the sport is growing enough, that they're adding teams, that certain things are happening, that there's not guaranteed to be that big labor war again.
Who would win, Truth Serum or Gary Bettman? Because I think they're kind of opposing forces.
You're walking me down a tough path there.
No.
Gary's a strong-willed man, so I'll put it that way. He doesn't say anything he doesn't mean to say.
Yes. Look, we're going to play a conversation that I had with Tom Rennie here after we've talked to you, and it was a great conversation, long, wide-ranging conversation. And right at the end, we're wrapping it up, and he starts talking to me about a 19-year-old draft. The president and CEO of Hockey Canada, was very generous with the information, and obviously, this is becoming serious. For a while there, I just thought it was kind of, people talking, but I get the sense talking to Tom that this is really a legitimate, not necessarily a done deal, but it's a very legitimate conversation. What are you hearing about the potential of the NHL draft going from 18 to 19?
Well, it's an interesting conversation because it involves so many stakeholders. You're talking about the Canadian Hockey League. You're talking about NCAA, obviously Hockey Canada, USA Hockey. You're really reimagining what it means to develop hockey players from, the time that they get to teenage years and then up into, where you start to usher them into pros. And I think that where some of the uncertainty comes in is yes, I have a feeling that for example, Tom Rennie and even the CHL to a degree are okay with the idea of going to a 19-year-old draft. It would also mean you're generally drafting players into the Canadian Hockey League, the WHL, the OHL, at a year, more advanced than you currently have it. But no one knows exactly where the other side stands. And it's one of these things that it's going to work with if everyone agrees to work in lockstep and make the concessions they need to make. And I think if one side drags its heels when kind of the moment of truth arrives, then it seems like that would be enough to hold it up. But, Pat LaFontaine has spearheaded this. They actually met 2 weeks ago, the day after that Olympic meeting, that got a lot more attention in New York City. And then, they've met four or five times, I believe now in the last 2 years, basically the stakeholders and all those from all those organizations, and they've made progress. But I think it started kind of as a bit of a pie in the sky, and that's probably why that was your original read on it. And now they're getting to a point where a decision has to be made. And certainly the 19-year-old draft has some, I think, serious support. But for example, one of the issues that I think is a little bit unclear still is if a player plays in major junior, are they able to go to the NCAA under this new format? And obviously that's something that hasn't been able to happen till now. But I think, with sort of all these groups working together and trying to rewrite, basically the rules that affect them all, that's something, if that happens, it might be enough to get it through. So, Tom's optimism, or I didn't hear your interview with him, Rob, but, the way he portrayed it, I would guess is reflective of what I've heard as well, that there's some real movement here, that this is a possibility. But I also sense that we're kind of at a stage where not everyone's sure what everyone else is exactly thinking, and they're going to have to kind of lay the cards on the table, and we'll see how they fall.
For someone, I have a vested interest. I think we all have a vested interest. I'm very interested in the overall development of all hockey players, and I think this would be a huge step in the right direction for overall development. But it seems to me that the sticking point in this will be the exceptional player, as always. Because under this rule, Connor McDavid wouldn't have played last year, and Tkachuk, I don't know if Tkachuk wouldn't have been drafted because he's just about to turn 19 and some things like that. But the other thing that kind of interests me is what happened with Austin Matthews. Austin Matthews bolts. Somebody told me yesterday, it's a great point. Does this open up a door for 18-year-olds to go flooding into Europe? I don't think so, but there's a lot of considerations here.
There are, and we have to remember with Austin Matthews' case, he didn't have the same pressures that some other kids that grew up in more traditional places do in terms of having made commitments or built relationships somewhere else. And, his, I believe it was Everett that held his rights in WHL. And, obviously he didn't want to do that. He hadn't committed formally to any of the schools. He went to the U.S. National Development Program. I think he had sort of a unique set of circumstances. He also was 2 days away from being a 2015 draft pick rather than a 2016, just the way his age fell. So he was 18 and able to legally work in Switzerland once his birthday passed in September there. So, I'm not sure that his case will be totally mimicked, but under this system, you would have to think it would be more common because, the players, and I could understand their point, and their agents would say, well, if you can go there and make a few hundred thousand dollars, why wouldn't you do it? Why wouldn't you maybe try to maximize your ability to make money? It's a difficult thing to stand in their way, but you have to think as a whole this would be better for not the star players. And certainly the way I've asked around about that there would be concessions, of course, to make sure Connor McDavid, someone who's that clearly head and shoulders above his age group, would be able to play up and would get drafted into the NHL, the year sooner, the way he was, as it stood. But, I think as a whole, this in theory works a lot better, but I mean, it's a pretty ambitious undertaking. If there's a lot of things that I'm sure I haven't even considered that would factor into it, but even just kind of the general points about when you can play where, I mean, that's a serious discussion. And, I think the important thing that we can say right now is that it's moved beyond kind of pie in the sky, having a couple of beers and throwing ideas out. I mean, it's getting to, they're trying to write down rules and see if they can agree on a new way of doing things.
Good stuff, Chris. As always, appreciate this. We will catch up with you next week. Enjoy your weekend, my friend.
I will do. You too, Rob. Thank you.
Chris Johnston, senior hockey writer and insider from Sportsnet, our guest down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. Savor a juicy burger with 100% Angus beef and a hand-scooped milkshake. Visit their new location now, open East Hill, 17th Avenue Southeast, and Stoney.